Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Child Welfare Raising Awareness Podcast, the podcast that keeps you in the know about all things child welfare. This podcast is brought to you by the Tuskegee University Department of Social Work. And I am your host, Terica Hardy, a licensed clinical social worker and former child welfare professional. If you are a student, current child welfare professional, educator, or parent, you've landed in the right place because this is your one-stop podcast show where we will raise awareness about interesting child welfare-related topics. I will be bringing on various guest experts to discuss real-world topics related to child welfare to equip you for practice, and I must say that it's going to be quite interesting, to say the least. Hello and welcome everyone to this episode of the Child Welfare Raising Awareness Podcast, brought to you by the Tuskegee University Department of Social Work. I am Terica Hardy and I am your host. And today we are in for a treat. I am so thrilled to have Dr. April Jones, the department chair of the Tuskegee University Social Work Department, here with us today. Now, we've entitled this episode, What's Up with TU? Because there's a lot of things on the horizon. There's a lot of things literally up with TU. And so Dr. Jones, she and the staff at the Tuskegee University Social Work Department, they are doing some amazing and innovative things in social work. And that's what we're going to discuss today, literally what's on the horizon. And I'm looking forward to it because Dr. Jones is going to spill all of the tea as we discuss what we can look forward to as TU supporters, future students and professionals as well from the TU Social Work Department. Before we bring her on, she comes highly decorated. So let me give you a brief bio of Dr. Jones. Dr. Jones is a licensed social worker and organizational psychologist with over two decades of experience in the behavioral sciences profession at the non-government and government settings. She is currently in academia at Tuskegee University College of Arts and Sciences Department of Social Work, serving as department chair and associate professor. She has traveled the world presenting her research and has numerous domestic and international publications in peer-reviewed journal articles. She currently serves on the Council on Social Work Education Board of Directors as the BSW program representative, serving for a three-year term. And she has served as a site visitor for reaffirmation reviews of social work education programs. Dr. Jones is passionate about education, training, and professional development, which brings us to today's podcast interview. And lastly, she is a member of the Alabama Higher Education Consortium on Child Welfare. Dr. Jones, welcome to the show. We are so delighted to have you.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Ms. Hardy. I often wonder, who are people talking about when I get an introduction? But I guess that's me. Thank you for having me on the show.
We are delighted to have you. We're delighted to have you. So wait a minute, before we get into everything. So Dr. Jones, so when I think about Tuskegee University, you know, I think about some of the friends that I have that have graduated and they're alums of Tuskegee. And regardless of wherever they are, right, we could be anywhere. But if someone does the TU call, I call it the TU call because I'm not an alum. If someone does the TU call, I mean, they stop in their track. They stop whatever they're doing and they proudly and loudly respond, you know. And so, you know, the TU call is someone may say TU and they'll stop. They'll look around and they'll loudly and proudly yell, you know. I have to ask, since you're part of the TU staff, can you share with us a little bit about the TU call and kind of what it stands for? Talk to me about the you know part. When they say TU, you know.
Well, that's really something amazing and unique at Tuskegee. It kind of goes back to our African-American lineage and heritage of call and response back in those times of Negro slavery. And so, and then it comes over into religion, into churches, hallelujahs and amens almost in some congregations. But for Tuskegee, it's so wonderful because there are three ellipses there. And that leaves room for you to put whatever you want. And for my students, in the Department of Social Work, I said, you can do anything that you put your mind to, yeah, to let them know that they can achieve and aspire to be anything in the world that they're studying to be. And they know, as Tuskegee students, you're among the best and the brightest in the world.
I love that. So you know has a meaning, and they don't have to allow anyone to create that meaning for them. They are empowered by the education that they're getting, and they're empowered, you know, in terms of who they are and their roots. They determine what they know to literally be true. Wow, that's rich. That's rich. And Tuskegee University has such a rich history. And I know that it shows up. I'm pretty confident that it shows up in the education and even in the culture that's at the university as well. And I'm sure that has a lot to do with your vision for the social work department. I have to say, you know, I follow you on LinkedIn and I'm a TU supporter. You know, I try to keep up with what's happening with the Department of Social Work. And I must say, you guys are doing some amazing, amazing things. Can you share with us, as the head of the department, some of the things that makes the TU Social Work Department, like, what sets it apart?
Okay, wow, that's a loaded question. We could probably talk in 3 podcasts about that, but I'll try to condense it. Well, first, it comes from a rich history of innovation, starting from the days of our co-founder of Tuskegee Institute, Booker T. Washington. And I think that lineage and that spirit resonates today in anyone who sits in the seat of administration and management of this university to carry out our mission. But in the Department of Social Work, we got started in 1970 by Dr. Rufus Johnson, and he led the reins up until about 1974, where our longstanding department chair, Dr. Francis Taylor, I would say, reigned on the throne for about 30 years. Wow. And took us through 8 reaffirmations. We were accredited in 1974. We were one of the few programs in the state of Alabama and across the world that became accredited by the Council on Social Work Education. And we hold that accreditation strongly today.
Wow.
Yes. As we move on about innovation and thought, there are so many things. My tenure started in 2018 here after a long career with the United States Armed Forces Air Force branch as a military social worker. I think I bring a little bit of the Tuskegee Airmen flavor and vibe. They had 2 wars they were fighting. One was for equality in the States, and one was in the air for all men. And so, but they never gave up, and it didn't matter what was happening on either side of the war. They were to fly, fight, and win. And that's what they did. And so when in coming in the ranks here, it was time to upgrade the program. A solid program already that has withstood the test of times with the evolving changes in the world. But now we're in the 21st century, the technology era. And so my goal in coming in was, how do I reach this different generational cohort of learners who are tech savvy? Mm. And so that brought on many new initiatives. So just to name a few, our first initiative was getting mixed reality simulation. And so we looked at augmented reality, virtual reality, and we did the mixed part of that, where clients or students were able to train prior to field placement with a client avatar, which behind that avatar is a trained or licensed, rather, social worker or psychologist that's giving them the real client experience and giving them feedback post the simulation. We also incorporate licensure prep into an actual senior seminar class that we've had for quite some time to better prepare students and to test how well are we teaching, and then how well are students answering or taking to the test, how equipped will they be post to get licensed. So those were 2 main things at the forefront that came about. And then there were more simulations that came out, computer automated simulations, 360 view simulations. And so I think as the students say, Dr. Jones, we got enough, we're stemmed out, but they love them. And so it helps putting theoretical concepts into practice within our classroom. And I will tell you, our students are highly sought out because of their rigorous education and experience. We added some unique courses to our program. What we have was already solid, but we added working with disabled persons, military and veteran population and social work. We added case management that was so needed for baccalaureate level education. And we also added global social work, which I think just really been amazing. So in trying to think about incorporate all of our vulnerable populations, as well as looking at those EPAWS 2015 and now going into 2022 from the Council on Social Work Education, how do we include diversity, equity, and inclusion and the global perspective of social work with America being such a melting pot. So those are a few things: new internships, paid internships, not unpaid internships. COVID brought us virtual internships, more technology into field education to our, thanks to our fabulous new field director, Ms. Andrea Mafidan, a licensed clinical social worker who's brought a lot of innovation. And something TU has had for many years that many programs don't have is a computers class, a computers application class. So they learn about how to use application and practice for, of course, at the bachelor's level, intervention and other forms of work, and also how to program some of those computer applications to include your statistical software such as SPSS and some of the other popular ones, Invivo and things like that, prior to coming into their research class. So we got a lot of things going on. Our students go international. We are a child welfare related program, which we feel is the mother and the core of social work, teaching them about children, losing families, and how to go out and be a child welfare professional post-graduation or to go on to graduate school in hopes that they will continue on in that specialized track for working with children, youth, and families.
Wow, you guys have some amazing things happening. I mean, some of them I knew about, you know, I've read about, but others, this was news to me. You guys are doing some amazing work. And I mean, as a social worker as well, I'm excited about the profession and where it's going in the future and how you all are preparing them for the profession. So you guys have a lot of things on the horizon.
I did forget to mention that we did start a telehealth program where our students do get certified in working in telehealth prior to graduation. I did want to put a plug out there for the Southeast Telehealth Resource Center. And of course, this podcast came about because of our Continuing Education Academy that we started to prepare students and professionals for the child welfare workforce with various clients in various child welfare settings.
Thank you for that. I do plan to talk a little bit about the Continuing Education Academy a little later on in the episode. I want to back up a little bit. You talked about how you all have your child welfare program and you really worked your curriculum. Your curriculum is rigorous and you really work to prepare the students for real world experiences. And I want to back up to your simulations, because I think that that's one of the unique things that I admire about Tuskegee. You know, I think about, many may not know, but I'm a former child welfare professional. And when I was receiving my undergraduate degree, I also went through the child welfare program. And I wish I would have been privy to experiencing those simulations. I believe that it provides confidence to the students and helps them to be even more prepared for the profession. So can you back up a little bit? I mean, and just tell our listeners, some of them may or may not know, what exactly is a simulation?
Oh, wow. You asked a loaded question. So a simulation is a simulated experience with a client scenario or situation. A simulation, unlike computer automated simulations, is in real time. And it's where, when we say mixed reality simulation, it's not just the actor coming in on a, so to say, Zoom screen. The actor is coming in the form of an avatar. And I think everyone might know what avatars are, because now people can put them on their Facebooks and all kinds of places. And so it relates to the generational cohort that we're educating. But basically, it's an imitation of a situation or a process where the actor or the actress is in the action of pretending to be a specific client in a certain setting and a specific scenario. Okay. And so it's the production of a computer model of something, but for the purpose specifically of a content area that is being studied. And it's in real time. And when I say real time, some may be able to recognize it as synchronous as well. But biggest difference is in this particular mixed reality simulations that we use through the Mergeon company and our partnership with St. Leo University. Instead of seeing me, you see my avatar. And my avatar could be female or male, because the actors are trained in being able to change their voice in privation. It's just really amazing experience. And there's a virtual background So unlike seeing somebody's real office, they may be in a healthcare setting, they may be in a criminal corrections setting for juveniles, they may be in a messy home, they may be in a nursing home. It could be an array of different virtual settings that come to play. And what we love about it is when we began doing simulation, so many social work programs were having simulation, live, real-time simulations, and they had space for it. They had a room. And I realized we don't have an extra space at Tuskegee where we can just get furniture and these different things. And what I did like about what some other simulations were doing, they were using just students, peer-to-peer simulations. As I began to research mixed reality simulations and simulations in social work, I came across a really good book called Using Simulations in Assessment and Teaching, which was adapted for social work, written by Marion Bargo, Mary Rollins, Elaine Kotz, and Cameron Logie, and is produced by CSWE Press, which really helped me realize through that and research that it's better to get trained professionals to give a simulated real experience as opposed to peer-to-peer students, which is shown not to be as effective. While it's good to get students who are enrolled in theater school, unfortunately, TU does not have theater here. And so we didn't have the privilege of getting students from a theater discipline. So we had to go the route of the mixed reality simulations and making sure whatever we're doing had research reliability and validity. So the students, we get mixed messages. Some of them love it. Some of them are a little hesitant. But after the research says after 2 to 3 experiences with the simulations, students become more and more comfortable. But the whole idea is to prevent the client shock in internship when you get that first initial client. And it's like, oh my gosh, real client. And they just said something and I don't know how to respond. So by the time our students get to field education, and we have had comments to say they were very comfortable with their clients. They didn't feel shocked. Some of the clients were easier than the simulation because the simulation is programmable. So we can have degrees of frequency where it can be easy, moderate, moderate high, and it can have severe where that client is actually swearing, getting a little hostile on the screen. So we can just program the client avatars to do so many things. They play with their cell phones, they turn their heads, they flirt with the clients, with the students. And so one student was just in awe and said, pause simulation. And I asked her what was wrong. She said, is the client coming on to me? And I said, yeah, clients do that. And she says, what do I do? I'm not interested. I said, well, you've learned a lot in class. You got to find a way to tell the client you're not interested and refocus the client. And so by the end of the simulation, students truly learned that social work is a professional program. It is a science. It's not common sense like so many people think in the world that they can just go out and do child welfare work or they can just go out and do social work.
Talk about it.
Yeah. And I tell students, no, social work is a professional program. You have to get licensed for a reason because there is a science behind this. You have to have competency to practice as social work. That's why we have a foundation of competency-based and experiential learning pedagogy in our program.
Yes. Oh, talk about it. I'm so glad you hit on there's a science behind social work and the way that we move, the way that we practice. In terms of our code of ethics, when as related to similar professionals that do similar work, our code of ethics is pretty comprehensive. And that just speaks to the commitment that we have. I say that as a former member of the NASW National Ethics Committee. Again, there is a science behind social work, and it's important that you enroll in a great program like TU that will prepare you for it. But I can imagine, you mentioned the client shock, getting that first client in your internship. And for some students, you intern in one setting, but we know that social work, it can be broad. It's very different areas and settings of specialization. And so for some students, they may have a internship in one setting, but end up having, when they graduate, getting a job in another setting. And so I really admire the simulation and how you go the extra mile and you hire actors and actresses to put on the simulation and so that they can be better prepared. You know, I, as a student, I would rather have that client shock and experience it among my peers with my instructors in a safe space so that they can kind of, they can coach me through it or they can support me through it versus me being in an office, a client is in front of me and I've never experienced it before. What we all know as seasoned professionals, you can have as much experience as you can have, but there's always going to be that one instance where you didn't see it coming. That's just quite interesting. But if you have already have experienced and walked through and navigated through that client shop before, you know within, I can do this. I can get through this. I can use the same resources, the same support that I had back when I was in field placement, back when I was in taking that simulation in my coursework. You know, I can get through this. So again, I just admire that about your program and how you're really preparing individuals and professionals, future professionals, for the real world.
Absolutely. It goes back to call and response to you. You got this. You can do anything you put your mind to, even with the client shock. They managed to maneuver through field and talk about it in seminar.
I would like to see the research on how that could possibly be linked to preventing burnout in the future, because we hear a lot of even early professionals that, you know, that's new to the field and how they get into it. They had their field placement, but they get into the field and they say, this is not what I expected. So I think that the simulations gives them an opportunity to experience reality so that they can have realistic expectations for the field. So again, great work to you. And in terms of child welfare, we know that burnout is child welfare professionals. There's a high risk of them burning out. And so I can imagine how this is possibly helping that, helping to alleviate that as well. And so you're telling me that simulations are incorporated into your coursework?
Yes. If it's not mixed reality simulation, it's computer automated simulations or 360 view simulations. So every class, especially the junior and senior years, has chance at using the simulations that are child welfare related and in child welfare related courses. Mm-hmm.
And while we're talking about child welfare, I'm just curious, there's so many myths out there about child welfare. And as the head of the Department of Social Work, what is a myth? What is a myth? Because we have future child welfare professionals listening. We have seasoned child welfare professionals listening and also community members. What's a myth about child welfare that you feel needs to be debunked right now?
Oh, wow. There can be a plethora of them. But I think one of the biggest myths is you won't be able to make enough money or get a job. There are a plethora of jobs out there. And when we say child welfare, many people think in the state of Alabama, we call it the Department of Human Resources. Some states call it child welfare agencies, etc. There are plenty of jobs and different jobs. It's not just all about foster care and in-home services. There are other capacities that one can work in. And as a social worker, students have an upper hand as a graduate because perhaps they've had an internship at a child welfare agency or just the highly sought out skill set of the social worker that is specifically trained to work within that profession. Child welfare could be corrections. Child welfare could be in some other capacity in a private nonprofit agency. So when we speak of child welfare, I always say child welfare related agencies, because we know that we have this, what we call the mother of social work, which is Department of Human Resources or Child Welfare Agency. And I always tell students, if you can make it in child welfare, you can make it in any industry or any other child welfare agency, because it will teach you the core of different types of vulnerable populations and services. So one myth is you can't get a job. Yes, you can. There are plenty out there. One myth is you won't make money. Yes, there's money to be made. And you will find when you work in child welfare, employers will seek you out because of the experience that you have. And it's not just, we used to be known as the friendly visitors, or some people would call child welfare workers the kid snatchers. It's more than that. And I tell students, we don't snatch children. We don't want, child welfare doesn't want to remove children from the home. We want to keep the family intact in place. And I always tell students, we don't really want to go to someone's home. They give us an invitation when there's child abuse and neglect in the home. They give us the invitation to come in. But this is one of the best invitations they'll ever have because it's a turning point to change. We are change agents. And that's the beauty of child welfare. It's reunifying families, making them whole, or whatever their lack of need may be. You, that social worker, are that person who can help the client help themselves. But the key is the client has to want the help in order for it to work. As long as they're involuntary, you won't get very far. But we learn in social work, we don't give up on clients, that we meet the client where they are. And at some point, the change will come, whether it's swift or slow. Each client is different, but it's the endurance with the client that matters in child welfare.
I mean, you just dropped so many gems just in that moment. But I've got to go back. You mentioned how many have said that if you can make it in child welfare, you can pretty much make it in other areas, almost every other area in social work. And I tell you, I am a living witness to that. I started out in child welfare, and I tell you, I'm still using the skills that I had to hone and had to cultivate in my first 3 years straight out of getting my bachelor's degree, that it has truly been rewarding for me having to think on my feet and build rapport. I'm knocking on someone's door. I'm not with a publishing clearinghouse with a big check. I'm coming, and there's some possible or alleged child abuse or neglect happening. And they're generally not happy to see me. And so I'm having to use what I've learned in my curriculum, what I've learned in obtaining my degree, and also use that to build rapport with that client. I think you hit the nail on the head when you mentioned about giving our clients space and being patient with them. And every client is different, and knowing which skills to use and how, right? So I think that it has truly equipped me, and the payoff been, you know, rewarding and, you know, and awesome for me as well. I support social work professionals that are interested in going into child welfare. I do believe you got to have the heart for it, but I support them in going into it. I truly believe that it builds a strong foundation for you. I do not regret going into and starting out as a child welfare professional, as a social worker. I do not regret it. What I want to ask you in terms of simulation, you know, as we talk about professional development, also for your students, but you know, also for seasoned child welfare professionals, are there any plans for possibly, you know, professional development for community members or for child welfare professionals that are out there that might involve simulations? Does TU have any plans, or is that, you know, in discussion?
That's a great question. A part of our CEA, or Continuing Education Academy, efforts is preparing students and those currently in the child welfare workplace. For some time, we had worked with the local Department of Human Resources about putting together something for employees who may be lacking some of those soft skills that are needed or may have not been trained in social work, and how we could use the simulations to strengthen their practice. Unfortunately, COVID-19 hit when some of that conversation and planning went in place. So we are just now getting to a point where we are post-COVID in our new COVID era or world. And we hope to revisit that perhaps as a special summer project where we use some simulations. We actually just got trained off a program called Project Forecast, where we look at trauma-informed practice and care of the client and as well as the practitioner. And so there are some grant schemes in the work of developing and implementing that program. And we hope to modify it using some of the mixed reality simulations. And that will roll out to professionals in child welfare agencies, and it'll be immersed into the curriculum as well as we take this new area of behavioral health type of trauma-informed care and practice, and also look at vicarious trauma of those working in child welfare agencies that may expose them to trauma over and over again. So how do we do some self-care, incorporate that NSAW code of ethics, self-care part on top of care for our clients? And the simulation is a perfect way, a non-threatening way, to experience that, make mistakes and not be sued or have any liability with it. Get some real-time feedback. And then you're already somewhat familiar. Of course, every client is unpredictable, but you got a hunch of some situations and you've learned about some do's and don'ts as well. So yes, the simulation is going to, we hope to take that project forecast program and roll it out. We have Tennessee partners, New York partners, and of course, those in Alabama. And so we'll be rolling out to child welfare professionals in that capacity. So stay tuned, join our Continuing Education Academy, subscribe. We got a lot of great things in the works. So thank you for that question, Ms. Hart.
Yes. And, you know, as a person, I sit in on the Project Forecast training. I have to say it's amazing. I love that it's trauma informed and it helps to cultivate a lens in terms of looking through the lenses of trauma informed care, being trauma informed and how that affects behavior, how that affects treatment planning and treatment coordination for our clients, and also looking at how that requires us to take care of ourselves. You mentioned that vicarious traumatization. And for those of you listening that may not understand what vicarious traumatization is basically when you witness a client, basically the client shares with you their trauma and you didn't go through it as a professional, but you feel like you've gone through it because of the stories that you've heard your client share and also what you have experienced, you know, with the client, right? Or through the client. So I think that that's important. You mentioned soft skills earlier. I think that that's important in terms of the line of work that we do as social workers and child welfare professionals. Can you share with us what you mean by soft skills for our listeners?
Sure. Yeah. So we often forget we have so much jargon in our line of our profession. So thank you, Ms. Hardy, for bringing me back to by way of a definition for that. So soft skills are what some might coin as interpersonal skills, how to engage and communicate verbally and nonverbally with the client, okay? And thinking about when we talk about starting where the client is, being able to assess where they're at and what type of communication. We practice something called motivational interviewing. We learn about it in social work and talk about using the ORs and different things. It may be that you have to assess, using your soft skills, assess where the client is and what's the conversation that needs to be attained. Do you jump in and just start talking about recovery, or do you use motivation in on a scale of 1 to 10? Where might you be in your readiness to make change for substance abuse? And so soft skills is just learning how to engage, how to build rapport, what's your body language saying to the client, how to be attentive and actively listen, what signals are you sending with your voice or your body? So those are some of those soft skills. And then what's the time to be gentle when a client is emotional? What are some of the things that you do? When is the time for you to step away when maybe perhaps you're getting emotional or not just sharing some boundaries and so forth? So soft skills, as we know it in our profession, would be communication, verbal and nonverbal skills, looking at also how to interact within the organization and as a professional. And that could incorporate an array of things. So I won't go into the alphabet soup of all those soft skills, but some of the main ones I did mention that social workers need to have in order to actively engage their clients.
Absolutely. And that solidifies what we discussed earlier. Social work is a science. Science is all about, you know, understanding, having tools in your arsenal, having tools in your toolbox, but knowing when to pull those tools out by assessment, knowing when, you know, when you're interacting with your clients. We know our clients are on different levels, different educational levels, different socioeconomic backgrounds, right? And so understanding which tools to use, you know, for each of our clients. You mentioned the CEA. So let's get into it. One of the things I appreciate about TU is that you share the love. So you just talked about how you really work to prepare your students for the profession, but you also share the love. You really are vested in educating the community. That means the professionals within the community. And also I've seen you do things for parents, for foster parents and for caretakers as well. But I want to circle back. You mentioned the CEA, because I think that segues into, you know, how TU is supportive of professional development in the community. Talk to us about the CEA. First of all, what does CEA, what does that mean?
Okay. Well, first I want to say thank you for asking this question about the Tuskegee love, as we call it in Tuskegee Nation, as some of the students call it. So it's Mother Tuskegee for a reason, and we're a loving mother, so to say. And so we nurture and grow and cultivate our students, but also those in the surrounding communities. And the CEA, the Continuing Education Academy, which was, let me give a little history of it, was kind of one day we were talking about what we could do to help the community and professionals in rural areas. And Ms. Fabrielle Holston, who's been here over 2 decades as an adjunct instructor, said, I know, we have CE approval. Why don't we do some professional development? And I said, okay, what will we call ourselves? Continuing professional development? And I remember Dr. Maya Martin coming in and says, nah, I don't think that's too catchy. And so she and I and Fabrielle began to talk, and we all came up with a catchy Continuing Education Academy, because we want everybody to join the academy. Everybody's not a part of the university, but you are a part of our academy in the Department of Social Work, okay? And Ms. Amafadon, our field director, always says we have our own little sweet island here, because we're a small group, but in the words of our adjunct instructor, Dakara Daniel, we come with a mighty punch. And that punch is for real, but it's not a child abuse punch now. It's a punch just punching the way, you know, any blocks or barriers, we're trying to maneuver over those. And so with that, that's what we came up with, the Continuing Education Academy at Tuskegee Department of Social Work. It would be an online CEA because we know in the rural area, everyone doesn't have access to transportation. And also sometimes you stay so far away. If we were having something at 5 o'clock, it would take you 1 or 2 hours to get here, depending on what county you lived in the rural areas. And so we wanted to make it accessible to our different community partners in Macon, Bullen, Barber County, Tallapoosa, some of the surrounding counties. Anyone is welcome to come. But our main goal was looking at rural counties, those social workers, parents, foster parents. So when we say professional development, that also comes into development of those who care for our clients, which could be caregivers, could be foster parents, could be clergy. So our topics around child welfare related topics are very broad, because we realize when you talk about people coming into an academy, we're not just talking about professionally trained social workers. We also have counselors. We also have nurses, okay? We have physicians. We have psychologists that are part of our interdisciplinary and sometimes in just multidisciplinary team. We even do interprofessional study here with the School of Nursing. And so we know that we had to name something like an academy where all professionals, all caregivers, all parents, all advocates or supporters of child welfare related work could come together, politicians. And so we offer an array of things out of the Continuing Education Academy to equip everyone to support their needs at an affordable rate. So we pride ourselves as being an affordable Continuing Education Academy. We do want to say thank you to the Alabama Higher Education Consortium on Child Welfare. We're a part of that consortium as a Title IV-E university. And from that, we're able to offer most of our CE offerings low cost or no cost. And really all people are paying for are the CEUs or the certificates of completion, because our consortium membership and being a Title IV-E university helps cover the cost for our speakers or e-learning, et cetera. Now, we do provide free slots sometimes to child welfare workers at the Department of Human Resources and to our students when conferences come about as a part of our partnership. So that's just the beauty of it. Some of our main frontline workers, such as those at Department of Human Resources and our students, get to come to our 2 annual conferences at no cost. And that's during National Social Work Month in March and National Child Abuse Prevention Month in April. And we have other webinars and things that we offer, but those are 2 big virtual conferences that we make sure that our professionals on the front line and our future professionals are there at no cost to become more equipped. And this year's thing that we had was more of a toolbox thing. So I hope that some of you attended our last conference with Croft, the voice as a moderator, had a good little show or time about equipping your toolbox and how that all connected in your line of work for child welfare.
I know I attended it. I had a good time. I attended both the conferences and I had a good time and really learned some interesting topics. But that's another thing. You guys, you know, you bring in speakers and experts that that have different areas of expertise. And it's amazing how it enhances. We're able to build upon it as students and even as professionals so that we can serve them in the best capacity, in the best way. And you mentioned the Continuing Education Academy, and that is exactly how this podcast was birthed. This is definitely in tandem and in step and aligned with the Continuing Education Academy. The purpose of this podcast is basically to highlight and for you to be literally in the know, the title in the know about child welfare. The title of this podcast is the Child Welfare Raising Awareness Podcast. Raising Awareness is the acronym for RAP, right? And so because we want to raise awareness about various topics that's child welfare related. So this is our first episode. We're going to have a time for this season of episodes because we're going to be interviewing various experts and bringing them on so that everyone can be educated. The community, professionals, students, everyone, caretakers can be educated because I do believe that, you know, when you're educated, you're empowered. So again, this has been a great podcast episode. But before we close it out, I do want you to talk a little bit about, you mentioned when you talked about earlier about how Tuskegee, you also highlight the global in terms of international social work as well. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Sure, I sure can. But first, let me give shout outs to my students for helping name the podcast and even bringing on the idea of a need for a podcast. I was oblivious to how many students listen to podcasts, and also people in rural areas tend to tune in to podcasts. So thank you to all the social work majors who stepped up to the plate to vote on and faculty the name of the podcast. So global social work. I think Tuskegee has something really unique in our department that some HBCUs may not have, and some other schools may have. But we have a fabulous Tuskegee University Global Office with Dr. Rhonda Collier, who is the Global Office Director. I will never forget when I first came on board, she graciously wanted to come around and meet me and tell me about all the opportunities that the Global Office had to offer. And I could tell she had done her homework and she had partners who were talking about social work. And so we began to research what could be done. So we had our first student go study a semester abroad in Australia. And then the student went to Korea and worked in Teach America Abroad. And before we knew it, the student was staying there, but just telling everyone what a wonderful experience. And then before COVID hit, I had wrote up a plan for the global social work plan per our discussion. And we were set to go to South Africa and COVID hit. And that deterred our plans for 2 years. But we circle it back around to now what we have, a virtual project that we're working on with our South African partners, and we've been developing internship abroad. And so global social work covers one of our educational policy assessment standards, 2015 and the 2020, where social work, we're just not compartmentalized. Not only are we a multidisciplinary profession, we reach the world, whether we bring the world to us or we go to the world. And so when we think about global social work, it's not always means that we have to get on the airplane and travel to a different country. Well, that is there. We know we have many NGOs and spaces there. We have partner social work universities in other countries for study a semester abroad, service learning abroad, et cetera. But we also bring the world to TU virtually, and that's what we've done in this virtual project with South Africa, where Ms. Fabrio Holston, our longtime adjunct instructor, is spearheading that initiative in partnership with me. And we also took a group of students to, I believe it was Kyrgyzstan or Biscat, where Dr. Rhonda Collier and the field director actually went to present about an international project we were working on, and also some internship projects that we were working on that, as we know, human trafficking happens, and that's a part of child welfare. And what has happened is we have global problems that come right to our doorstep. And so we know America's a melting pot. And so the global social work is very much so of who we are. No matter what city or state you live in the U.S., you will have an international or global client or refugee or immigrant, whatever the term that might be used, you will experience diversity in your work, whether they're U.S. citizens or not. Global social work looks at the diverse perspective of clients trying to incorporate that DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion in practice. And I hope that helps in some way of understanding how we kind of take our helping hands to the world.
Yes, I think that I wanted to make sure that I highlighted it because I don't think that global social work or international social work, it gets enough credit. Or let me just say this, let me reframe that. I don't think it gets enough exposure. And I think that you mentioned it, whether you're traveling across the world or if you may still be in your city, global social work is you're going to meet it in practice in some shape, form or fashion. And I think that it's important for us to talk about that. And it has everything to do with diversity, equity, and inclusion, everything to do with it. I think that it's cool. I think that listeners should understand that you can do anything with your social work degree. And social workers are needed in various settings, in various countries, in cultures. We're needed. We are supposed to be at the head of the table, you know, because of the type of training, the type of lens that we view the different perspectives that we have, we're supposed to be at the head of the table. And so I definitely wanted to highlight that and all of the work that you all are doing globally. Well, Dr. Jones, this has been an amazing episode.
Thank you for your time and pulling out of me all the many things that we do in social work. And one thing I want to do, also give a shout out to the international students on campus. We have a robust population of international students. And so even on our campus, we get to practice global social work in our interactions and our monthly observations of different theme months and diversity days.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to stay tuned. You've certainly given us some things to look forward to in terms of what's up with TU, because TU is definitely going up and what's on the horizon for you all. So we're definitely going to stay tuned. Remember, she talked about the Continuing Education Academy. So stay tuned for that. Stay tuned for the conferences and for the different events that TU, the Department of Social Work, will be hosting. We definitely want to stay tuned for that. Are there any last words or encouragement you would like to leave with our listeners today, Dr. Jones?
Oh, wow. Thank you for giving me. I just want to thank everyone for tuning in. I hope that you will subscribe to our CEA and continue to listen to our podcast episodes and grow with us professionally, whether you're in the community, individual and organization, a future social worker, or currently working in the profession. And one thing I like to share as a nugget that we have in our apartment are the Adinkra symbols that originated from Guyana. As a minority serving or HBCU institute, we have something special at the closure of the program, which I'd like to bring about to this podcast today, is that the Adinkra symbol is usually something that signifies something about who you are and your spirit. And it's just something really wonderful to partake in as a closing ceremony. So I have an Adinkra signal that's called the Scamphoa. And it signifies as a backwards bird. And you may be wondering, why do you want a Adinkra symbol that symbolizes a backwards bird? So just to sum it up in easy words, basically it says life is lived forward but understood backwards. And so as you go throughout your journey, whether that's professionally or personally, sometimes we don't understand why certain things happen, certain curves in the road or whatever, but keep going because you'll understand it more and more as you look back. But the Scamphoa also means is to go back. So it means to go back and help souls. So Adinkras believe the past serves as a guide for planning for the future. And to that, this wisdom is learning from the past, which ensures a strong future. So everything you go through life, whether it's a client or yourself, you learn from it. And what doesn't break you makes you stronger. So I wanted to share that Adinkra symbol with the listeners. And if you've never heard of it, Google it, take a look at it, and maybe try to find the symbol that resonates with you. And our students get their symbol, and they also know when they look at that bracelet with their Adinkra symbol upon graduation, means you can do anything that you want to do, okay? And Scamphoa means to return, to go out, and to look and take opportunity. That's why I love it so much. And it's my symbol.
Oh, what an amazing way to close the episode. Life is lived forward, but it's understood backwards. Wow. And it talks about how you keep moving forward, keep, you know, navigating it, you know, and sometimes, you know, it's used as trust the process, like you trust the process, you keep going, but you don't just do that. You learn from it, but then you also, you go back and you get others, whether that be your clients, that be, you know, your loved ones, your friends, you go back and you get them as well. And you teach them as well. And you support them as well. I love it. And I love how you all give your graduates that symbol, that bracelet that will be with them. It kind of circles back to what we talked about at the beginning, the you know part, knowing who you are, remembering who you are. So this has been an amazing podcast episode. I want to thank everyone for listening in and tuning in. But hey, this is only the beginning. Make sure you subscribe and you look forward to and expect more from the TU Social Work Department. Thanks so much for joining us, Dr. Jones. And for our listeners, we will see you on the next episode. Until then, take care of yourselves.
Thanks for listening to the Child Welfare Raising Awareness Podcast, brought to you by the Tuskegee University Department of Social Work, where we discuss all things child welfare. I am your host, Terica Hardy, and we hope that you've enjoyed today's episode. Be sure to tell a friend or colleague about the podcast. Now, to get the latest on continuing education, events, conferences, and more, be sure to head on over to the TU Continuing Education Academy at www.tuskegeesocialwork.learningcard.com. Again, that's www.tuskegeesocialwork.learningcard.com. Thanks for listening and stay tuned for our next episode.